So as Myla said, we are going to be preaching from the lives of the patriarchs for a long time. I cannot even remember how long ago, but it was after Abram's death, but maybe not long after. So we're going to be talking about Joseph getting out of prison, and let's start with H. So if children want to come forward and have a seat up here, so a lot of different things we could think about as we think about this story of Joseph. So Joseph is going to get out of prison. Have any of you all ever been in prison? Grayson, you have?
No.
No, okay. Have you, Victoria? I don't remember you being in prison.
Not like prison for doing something bad,
or something like that. Yes, Grayson?
I dreamed it.
You dreamed about being in prison. Oh, dear. Well, fortunately, you woke up, right? I was in jail in Monopoly. Yes, what, Tanya?
Our closet was the jail.
Your closet was the jail. Fortunately, you're not in there anymore. So one of the things that I wanted to think about this morning is the idea of forgetting. So there's a lot of people in the story of Joseph who forget things. Okay, have you all ever forgotten something? Yes, Grayson.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Any of the rest of you ever forget anything? Yeah. So there's a verse from the Deuteronomy 9 verse 7 that says, "Remember." So that's the opposite of forgetting, isn't it? Do not forget how you provoked God to wrath in the wilderness. From the day that you departed from the land of Egypt until you came to this place, you have been rebellious against the Lord. Yes, Grayson.
Like the cupbearer forgot about Daniel. What's it just for Daniel?
It was Joseph, because we're going to talk about that today. So the cupbearer forgot about Joseph. That's right. So when people get older, sometimes they get something called dementia. Have you all ever heard of dementia?
No.
So sometimes people than the rememberers. Yeah, so there was one time that, this was not long after we moved to Virginia, that I went to drop off our trash. And I got there, and I had my trash with me, and I got my truck, because that's what I drove the trash to the transfer site in, and there was a lady there. And what do you think she said to me? This is a hard thing to guess. Yes, Elise.
Remember?
She said, remember. No, she actually didn't. Yes, Grayson.
Go away?
Go away. No, either. Victoria.
Did she say she had dementia?
Well, sort of. You were very close. So she said, I came here to drop off my trash, and I don't know how to get back home. And she started crying. And I tried to ask her questions to figure out if I could get her back home. And you know what? I didn't know where she lived. But she was very upset. She wanted to go back home. And she didn't know where she was. She didn't know a phone number of anybody I could call to help her out. And so what do you think I did? Yes, Grayson.
Pray.
I prayed. Well, I actually didn't. That's probably a bad thing. I should have prayed. Maybe she would have remembered that. I called the police. That's what I did. So I called the police, and a sheriff came out after a while. I had to listen to her over and over again. She said the same thing a lot of different times, because that's what people with dementia do. They say the same thing over and over again. She was really upset. The sheriff said, "You can leave, sir," and I did. And then that was it. But I don't think he arrested her and took her to prison. I think he tried to help her out. So I know that when I was a boy, sometimes my mother would ask me, and I would get busy. I was doing something else that was more important. I was reading, or I was playing with something. And what do you think I did? Yes, Grayson. Forgot, that's right. And she would say, "What did I tell you to do?" And I would say, "I don't remember." because I didn't remember. But she told me if I'd done it right away, that would have been a good thing. So the verse we read, remembering something. So what do you think Moses was telling the Israelites that they should remember? Yes, Grayson. I should remember God, but something else specific. So he want, yes, Elise.
A clock.
No, not a clock. So he wanted to remember all of the times that they had been bad. So he said, you people have complained a lot, not been well behaved, and you have been rebellious. And I want you to remember that. That's not the sort of thing you really want to remember, is it? Why do you think God wanted them to remember that? Right. He wanted them to be different in the future. So part of the reason why we have the Bible is so we can remember the mistakes that other people made and not make them ourselves. So sometimes God wants us to remember the time we messed up and when we did things that we weren't supposed to do so that we don't keep doing them in the future. Okay? So you all can go back to your parents and you can remember. So we are going to be studying from Genesis chapter 41 this morning. So if you all want to turn there, I would like you to think about what was going on 2 years ago. So for some of you, 2 years does not seem like a very long time ago. But in other ways, it seems like ancient days. So I was ordained a little over 2 years ago. That seems like a long time. Broken ground on the sanctuary project out there. Now it's actually standing. It's got a roof and shingles and all kinds of things on it. From a world standpoint, 2 years ago, Hamas attacked Israel. The U.S. had a balloon that was supposedly spying on North Dakota. That was a big deal. And Jimmy Carter entered hospice care. It didn't seem like there was a whole lot else that happened in 2023. I'm sure there were other things that were important. So I bring this up. In our story, it's been 2 years since the cupbearer left the prison with a promise that he would remember Joseph and speak to Pharaoh about him. And surely for the first few days after the cupbearer was released, Joseph had to wonder how long it would take for the message to come for Joseph to get out of prison. Every time someone came to the prison, knocked on the door, whatever they do at prisons, he would think, here's the message from that I am released. And now 2 years later, what do you think he thought? He thought, I'm done. That cupbearer doesn't remember me at all, and he's not going to send a message. So unless something miraculous happened, Joseph would not get out. And as I was thinking about this, the poem by John Milton was running through my mind. So I don't know if you all know the John Milton sonnet on his blindness, but I really like that poem. It says, when life is spent, ere half my days on this dark world and wide, and that one tout, which is death to hide, lodged with me useless, and my soul more bent to serve my maker therewith and present a true account, lest he return. Does God exact day labor, light denied, I fondly ask? But patience to prevent that murmur soon replies, God doth not need either man's work or his own gifts, who best bear his mild yoke. His state is kingly, thousands at his bidding speed, and post o'er land and ocean without rest. They also serve who only stand and wait. And this is poetry, so probably for most over our heads. But John Milton was a brilliant man. He wrote a lot of great works, but he did so even as he struggled with poverty and blindness. When he wrote the long poem, Lost, he was not able to write it down because he could not see well enough to do so. He dictated it to a series of aides who wrote it down and then read it back to him, and he would edit it based on how it sounded to him. But I love the general message of the poem. God asks us to continue using our talents, even when, as John Milton was, we struggle with blindness, or as Joseph was, we're stuck in prison, unable to do anything other than minister to other prisoners. I sang a song this morning that was, the words were by a lady who had discovered this in her own life. Blessed Assurance was written by Fanny Crosby, and we know that she's somebody who did not remember being able to see. She lost her vision very early. Psalm 27, verses 13 and 14 says, I would have lost heart unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart. Wait, I say. What is it that gives us hope? It is the knowledge that God is good and that we do not have to wait till we get to heaven to experience his goodness. And even Joseph in prison could hope. Waiting is hard. Without hope is hopeless. So let's read Genesis 41. It's a long chapter, but I think it's worth reading. Then it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream. And behold, he stood by the river. Came up out of the river 7 cows, fine looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. Then behold, 7 other cows came up after them out of the river, ugly and gaunt, and stood by the other cows on the bank of the river. Ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 fine-looking and fat cows. So Pharaoh woke. He slept and dreamed a second time, and suddenly 7 heads of grain came up on 1 stalk, plump and good. Then behold, 7 thin by the east wind sprang up after them, and the 7 thin heads devoured the 7 plump and full heads. So Pharaoh woke, and indeed it was a dream. Now it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt, God's wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh. Then the chief butler spoke to Pharaoh, saying, I remember my faults this day, when Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me in the custody of the captain of the guard. Both me and the chief baker, we each had a dream in one night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now there was a young Hebrew man with us there, a servant of the guard, and we told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each man, he interpreted according to his own dream, and it came to pass just as he interpreted for us. So it happened. He restored me to my office, and he. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him quickly out of the dungeon. And he shaved, changed his clothing, and came to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it, but I have heard it said of you stand a dream to interpret it. So Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, behold, in my dream I stood on the bank of the river. Suddenly 7 cows out of the river, fine-looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. Then behold, 7 other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt, such ugliness as I have never seen in all the land of Egypt. And the gaunt and ugly cows and the fat cows, when they had eaten them up, no one would have known that they had eaten them, for they were just as ugly as at the beginning. So I awoke. Also I saw in my dream, and suddenly 7 heads came up on 1 stalk, full and good. Heads withered, thin, and blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them. And the thin heads devoured the 7 good heads. So I told this to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years, and the 7 good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one. The 7 thin and ugly cows which came after them are 7 years, and the 7 empty heads blighted by the east wind are 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. Indeed, 7 years of plenty will come throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them, 7 years of famine will arise, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will deplete the land. So the plenty will not be known because of the famine following, for it will be very severe. And the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice, because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Now therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land to collect 1/5 of the produce of the land of Egypt in 7 plentiful years. And let them gather all the food of those good years that are coming, and store up grain under Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. Then that food shall be a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land may not perish during the famine. So the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh, in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find such a one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning wise as you. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you." And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took it off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain round his neck. And he had him ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried out before him, "Bow the knee." So he set him over Egypt. Pharaoh also said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, and without your consent no man may lift his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paaneah, his wife Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh all the land of Egypt. Now in the 7 plentiful years, the ground brought forth abundantly. So he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt and laid up the food in the cities. He laid up in every city the food of the land surrounded them. Joseph gathered very much grain as the sand of the sea until he stopped counting, for it was immeasurable. And to Joseph were born 2 sons before the years of famine came, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, "For God has made me forget all my toil and all my father's house." And the name of the second he called Ephraim, "For God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my..." Then the 7 years of plenty which were in the land of Egypt ended, and the 7 years of famine began to come. As Joseph had said, the famine was in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. So in all the land of Egypt was famished. The people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, "Go to Joseph, whatever he says to you, do." The famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, and the famine became severe in the land of Egypt. So all came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain, because the famine was severe in all lands. So as we said already, the passage tells us that 2 years have passed, and then it moves very quickly to telling us that Pharaoh had a dream. And you all read them already, 7 fat cows eaten by 7 skinny cows. And it's interesting, isn't it, that Pharaoh mentions the fact that he's never seen ugly cows like this in Egypt. And I always wonder if this is like when Catherine the Great was touring Russia and they hid all the ugly peasants. They had like the wealthy and good-looking ones. So Pharaoh thought Egypt's a wonderful place, but there actually were probably some skinny cows in Egypt. Surely there were. But these 7 cows were eaten by the 7 skinny cows, and you they'd eaten them. You would think they would fatten up just a little bit, but they weren't any fatter. And the same thing happened with these nice heads of wheat that were eaten by 7 shriveled heads of wheat. And the wise men couldn't tell Pharaoh a meaning of the dream. I think Pharaoh and probably the wise men as well knew that something important was meant by this number 7 that was repeated in both dreams. And I wonder if you hadn't read the Bible, would be able to interpret these dreams. I know I shared a dream, I think I shared a dream with you all once already, but I had a dream not so long ago where I dreamed our family was driving out west in a motorhome, and we were going over the Rocky Mountains. Vincent was driving. All this sounds pretty intimidating so far, and I was getting nervous, and the thing was, Vince was driving over these mountain passes in a motorhome in reverse. And he seemed to be doing a good job. He was doing way better than I would be doing, but I was getting more and more anxious in my dream, and I knew that disaster was coming. We were going to go off the edge, and our whole family would go meet Jesus in the clouds. I woke up. So I don't know what this dream means, and if you all have interpretation of my dream, you can share it with me afterwards, but maybe it just says I'm anxious with my son's driving. I don't know. But interpret dreams. These wise men may have been wise. I'm sure they were. They knew a lot of stuff. They could probably do higher math, but they could not interpret this dream. And at this point, the cupbearer remembered Joseph. He said he remembered his fault. Guess when he says this, he remembers the fact that he told Joseph he was going to remember him, and he did not. So remember from last time, the cupbearer and the baker had been put into prison, and there was Joseph there who interpreted their dreams accurate about what was going to happen. So Pharaoh immediately sent to get Joseph from prison, and despite the fact that Pharaoh was pretty desperate to figure out what these dreams meant, they took time to clean Joseph up. Years in prison, Joseph probably hadn't taken many baths there, and he was probably filthy. His beard had grown out, and the Egyptians took him and they cleaned him up as best they could. And so Joseph met Pharaoh. And we see, Joseph continued to be humble. He never took credit for his dream interpretation. He said, God can give you the interpretation of the dream. And at a minimum, you would think Joseph would have claimed a special relationship. He'd say, you know, King, I have this special connection with God, and because of that, I've spent so much time with him that I will be able to reveal this to you. He didn't say that. He said, heaven, and I have his ear, and he speaks to me and will tell me what Pharaoh's dream means. So the meaning of the dream was that there were 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. Now, the country of Egypt does not get very much rain at all. Does anybody know how much rain we get in the Lynchburg area here per year? Joe probably knows.
Roughly 25?
I thought it was a little bit more, but I thought it was between 30 and 40. But anyway, regardless, in the country of Egypt, on the coast by the Mediterranean, there are places where they get up to 8 inches of rain. In the desert, they get less than an inch of rain per year. That's not very much, is it? And they don't get any snow, so they don't get snow days. I guess they get sand days, maybe. So what was the difference? Good years and bad years as far as harvest? Well, it had to do with the Nile River. So the Egyptians talked about the gift of the Nile. The Nile gave them transportation on the river. It gave them papyrus, and the annual floods gave them the water that they needed to irrigate things, and it gave them new topsoil for their crops. So does anybody know the source of the Nile River? Grayson, do you know? The Sea of Galilee is actually not the Sea of Galilee. Anybody else have a guess? It is in Africa, that's right. So the Nile flows north into the Mediterranean. It actually has two sources. So people talk about the White Nile and the Blue Nile. So the White Nile has Victoria, which is a large lake on the borders between Uganda, Tanzania, and Kenya. And the Blue Nile has its source in Ethiopia, and that is at Lake Tana. When we talk about the floods that the Nile River would bring down, it had to do with rains in Ethiopia. So rains in Lake Tana would flow down the Nile, and they would bring topsoil and things like that down that they would use to irrigate their crops. And basically what this stream is saying, for the next 7 years after these first 7 years, so it's 7 years and then starting right after that, for another 7 years, they were not going to get the spring inundation on the Nile River. And this would be devastating for the farmers who lived beside the river. And it's interesting that Joseph says the famine would be so bad that good years would be forgotten. So another example of having, right? So memories of good meals do nothing to assuage the hunger of the moment. If you've ever read about people in concentration camps, as they got hungrier and hungrier, they often talked about food. They talked about food a lot, and it did not help them. None of them gained weight, even though they talked about food all the time. Joseph showed wisdom then, sharing with Pharaoh a way forward, and I think this is wonderful. So Joseph says, the way forward begins with people. So I think a lot of times we think about programs and process and materials and things like that. And Joseph says, put the right people in. This is important. Joseph is going to get to processes. He's going to get to a plan. But he told Pharaoh that without the right people on the job, and he didn't say me, without the right people on the job, successful. Select wise and discerning people, put them over this plan, and put other officials also wise to carry this out. And begin with a fairly heavy tax. So normally Pharaoh would take about 10% of the crop, and with years of plenty, raising taxes would not have been the normal pattern. They didn't need the extra because they were going to be getting 10% of a good harvest. But Joseph says they need to bump it up to 20%. But the surplus would not be spent, stored. And I was thinking a little bit about this, and this is the opposite of what most governments do. So last year, the U.S. government took in around $4.9 trillion in taxes, which that sounds to me. And then they borrowed another $1.8 trillion to cover the gap between what they took in and what they spent. That's my point, is not to analyze whether the U.S. government's spending the money or not, but simply just to say that in times of plenty, governments spend to the max. And in times of need, they spend just as much. And they just have different reasons why they claim that they need to spend it. Justinian, perhaps the greatest ruler of the Eastern Roman Empire. And when he took power in the 6th century, the treasury was full. And he immediately launched wars all across North Africa and into Italy, trying to restore the glory of the empire. When he died, there was nothing left in the treasury, and the empire began to dwindle very quickly. But he did conquer a lot of land. On a personal level, it's just wise for us to save a bit of money when there's times of plenty. So Pharaoh liked Joseph's advice, and I think the biggest thing was not so much that Pharaoh liked Joseph's plan. After all, it's a pretty simple plan, wasn't it? But Pharaoh, as others in the past had done so, identified something special about Joseph. He was blessed with a special connection with God, and he said, "Can we find anybody else in all of Egypt who is like Joseph?" And so Joseph went from being an imprisoned servant to being second in command in Egypt. And then Pharaoh gave Joseph a bunch of stuff. So he gave him nice clothes, exchanging prison rags for fine linen. He gave him a gold chain. So once Joseph had been bound in chains of the prison, now he has a chain of gold to wear. He was given to Pharaoh. And this signified authority. So a signet ring had some kind of an engraving on it. And when it was pressed into hot wax, it would leave an impression behind. And the point was that Pharaoh's authority was channeled to Joseph. And he was given the ticket. So in the United States, we have an airplane that carries the president around, and that's Air Force One. So any president, any airplane that carries the vice president is known as Air Force Two. And we don't hear Air Force Two, but typically the vice president travels around in a modified Boeing 757 that's flown by Air Force pilots. So chariots were expensive and not something that common people could afford, but this was a second chariot. This was second chariot. And then he gave Joseph an Egyptian name. So the name Joseph didn't mean anything to Egyptians. And like the Babylonians later, they wanted Joseph to fit in with their society culturally. We know that Daniel was named Belteshazzar, and this name Zaphnath-Paneah, which no one knows for certain what it meant. Some people say that the name means one who reveals mysteries. Others say that the name means the God speaks and he lives. Somehow this name had something to do with Joseph's connection with God and his ability to interpret things. And finally, he gave Joseph a wife. So Joseph's wife was the daughter of a priest. And once again, this was to send Joseph into Egypt and assimilate him into the culture as much as possible so that he wouldn't leave. They saw Joseph as somebody valuable and they wanted to use his abilities. Joseph had two sons. Manasseh means forgetting. Notice there's a theme here about forgetting and remembering. Joseph felt forgotten more than once. Here he's come to the place where he is able to forget. And Ephraim means fruitful. He had been fruitful in Egypt even though he never intended. And finally, the end of the chapter tells us that Joseph's words came to pass. So unlike with the cupbearer and the baker, where it only took 3 days to find out if the dreams were really accurate. Here, it was 7 years, but they found out. So I'd like to move on to just a few applications. First of all, God's timing is perfect. So I've talked about this a lot before, but I'm going to bring it up. It's the right time for things to happen to us. And I'm sure Joseph would have appreciated a faster timeline, less suffering along the way, just a different life pattern. Habakkuk 2, verses 6, for the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak and it will not lie. Though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come, it will not tarry. Behold the proud, his soul is not upright in him, but the just live by his faith. And I think you all read over this not so long ago in Sunday school, not? Righteous people live by faith, faith in God, but faith as well that God's plans will bring about the best time. So there are a lot of verses that talk about waiting, and I don't know how you feel about waiting, but most of us don't like it too well. If you show up early for an appointment, you're probably fine waiting until the actual appointment time, but as you spy, your frustration level will grow. And I know a lot of people get frustrated. And how long is it that you have to wait before you text the person you're supposed to meet and say, did you forget? At a certain point, you're going to say, we said 10:30 and it's 10:48. What's going on? We can't text God, can we? Isaiah 40, verse 31 is a very familiar verse. Wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. God doesn't tell us his plans ahead of time. If he would tell us the specific plans and how they would be fulfilled in our lives and what dates that would happen, I think it might be easier for us to wait, but he doesn't. And maybe part of the reason is because he wants us to learn patience. Humble, whatever the circumstances. So Joseph was humble, wasn't he? He had talent. And humility is the Anabaptist quality. I'm not sure if we're humble or if we're good at looking humble. Benjamin Franklin had decided that he was going to work on. He had 12 different virtues that he thought he should learn, and a Quaker friend told him that Other people thought he was proud, which he probably was. And so Franklin added humility. He had 13 different qualities he was going to work on. In his autobiography, he wrote, "I cannot boast of much success in acquiring the reality of this virtue, that is humility, but I've had a good deal with regard to the appearance of it." But our goal should not be simply to look humble. John Waldron, he's figured out how to look humble as good as anybody. But quite simply, we should be humble. Humility is recognizing that we have many gifts and talents, but their source is someone else. Joseph was always quick to point out the fact that God was the one who gave him whatever abilities he had. James 4:6 says, "But he gives more grace. Therefore, he says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble." Matthew 20, "Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." In many ways, humility is easier. Have you ever thought about the fact that the reason why we learn when we are young is because we have less distance to the ground to fall? Humble people have an easier time rising after a mistake because they never imagined that they were going to be free from mistakes. It's hard for proud people to take advice from others. They feel like they know most everything, and so they should be the ones to be giving the advice. 1 Corinthians 4, verse 7 says, "For who makes you differ from another, and what do you not receive?" Now, if you did indeed receive it, why do you boast as if you had not received it? And this is kind of silly, isn't it? But if somebody gives you something for your birthday, and then you brag about it constantly, Paul's saying, why about that? Somebody else gave that to you. We need to prepare for the future. So this is no Dave Ramsey talk, but if we're able to, it is helpful for us to save money to a certain extent so that we can save up for future events. And I was thinking about this in the parable that Jesus told about the rich man who had fields that gave an abundance harvest. Luke 12, 13 through 21, and you all probably remember this. The rich man said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and goods, and I my soul. Soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry." But God said to him, "Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? Who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God?" And the point that Jesus was making here was that wealth comes with responsibility. If our goal is simply to make ourselves comfortable, then we've missed. We need spiritual wealth far more than physical wealth. But Jesus also said we can use physical wealth to accrue spiritual wealth. And that's an interesting concept. I'm not going to really talk about it a lot. Kind of a last thing to think about is that we should not forget who we are. We need to be careful of cultural assimilation. So if we look at the lives of both Daniel and Joseph, we see an almost attempt that Babylon and Egypt made to make these men full citizens of the countries they were living in. They were given new names. They were given clothes of the realm. They were given status in the kingdom. And all so that they would allegiance from the place of their birth and the family they came from to the god of Egypt, the god of Babylon. Baron Jonathan Sacks was a Jewish rabbi. There is a secondary theme whose echoes continue to reverberate today. Can Jewish identity survive outside Israel? Specifically, can it survive freedom and equality? The irony is that under conditions persecution, Jews tend to stay Jews. It is only when they are affluent and integrated that in large numbers they assimilate and abandon their identity. And if he said that about Jews, I think he could say about Christians. are persecuted and they are apart, they do not cease to become Christians. They have chosen to identify with the cross of Christ and with his resurrection, and they will do nothing that does not go along. And yet, when society around tries to get them to be apart and assimilates them in, they tend to give up their true allegiance. And Jesus wants us to ask the question, what does it mean today to deny myself, take up my cross, and follow Jesus? Modern Christians want to ask the question how they can use the government to assure themselves of a comfortable life, how much of the appetite, culture of the world around them can they take in and still remain on the right path? And there are certain things that we do that are helpful to us to maintain a focus on the right things. And I do believe that there's a certain aspect of conservative Anabaptism that help us to maintain a testimony. Jesus told his listeners to the Sermon on the Mount that where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And I'm afraid that an awful lot of people who claim to be Christians have placed their treasure in the United States of America and have lost track of what being a Christ follower really means. The world wants us to become a part of itself, and it does not care what it has to give us, a gold chain, a wife, a chariot, in order to get us to be a part. And our human tendency is to forget. The butler forgot Joseph. And we talked about this last time. And maybe it was intentional. He just didn't want to talk to Pharaoh. Time in prison and get Pharaoh to remember that time. The time of famine would be so bad that people would forget the good years. There's a song in the musical, The Sound of Music, that talks about raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. If you just remember these good things, it won't bother you so much when a dog is biting you. And the answer is no, it hurts just as much. When you're feeling discouraged, it doesn't hurt to think about positive things, but most of us struggle to remember the we are dealing with darkness. And Joseph forgot. He specifically named Manasseh forgetting. And I am going to tell you this morning that Joseph was a trauma victim. He had been through some terrible things, and we don't this morning, but I don't think he ever dealt with those things. Have you ever wondered why Joseph was so emotional when he saw his brothers? Why he broke down and cried when he saw them? It was not because Joseph missed them, because he remembered how terrible they had been to him. And he still had fear in his heart from the last time he'd seen them, when they were selling him to traitors. And yet he had power. He had no reason why he was, and he still was. There are terrible emotions that can come up when we simply try to forget the past and do not deal with it. Forgetting may be easy, and yet it's really, really hard. Traumas don't just go away because time passes. And you've only to walk into a situation that reminds you of the hurt before it comes churning up to drown your soul. And memory is an interesting thing. Most memories are better than they really are. If I asked you to tell me where you were on September 11th, well, some of you would be able to say you don't remember because you weren't born yet. But some of you could tell me in a pretty detailed way things that happened, the world. Maybe there are other events in history where you could go back to. Scientists talk about flashbulb moments. These are memories associated with a traumatic event. September 11th, JFK's assassination, the Challenger explosion. And a group of psychologists decided to test people's memories of September 11th. They recruited over 3,000 people the week after September 11th and September 16th through 21 of 2001. They questionnaires. They included questions about how they learned about the attacks, who was the first person they had communicated with about the attacks, and how they felt afterward. And they found by 3 years after the event, so not very long, 80% of the subjects remembered accurately what had happened. And when asked about how they felt at the time, only 25% of them remembered accurately what they had said a week after the attack. And my point is that memory is hard. We tend to shift things in our mind intentionally. We are the hero of the story, and since we are the hero, we have to look good and deserve the respect of the people around us. And that's the story we tell. Ephesians 5, 8 through 13 says, "For you were once darkness, but now in the Lord. Walk as children of light, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them, for it is shameful even to speak of done by them in secret. But all things that are exposed are made manifest in the light, for whatever makes manifest is light." And Paul wanted the people of Ephesus to remember where they came from and remember. Maybe this is a little bit like the verse that I read to the children in children's class. If you've not done anything terrible in your past, you can't remember the terrible things that you've done in the past. But Paul, to realize the people around you who look so happy are filled with emptiness. Their lives are not fulfilling. They struggle. And they don't happy. They don't feel joyful. They don't feel peaceful. Henry David Thoreau was not a Christian, but he said the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. What is indignation is confirmed desperation. From the desperate city, you go into the desperate country and have to console yourself with the bravery of minks and muskrats, a stereotyped but unconscious despair is concealed even in what are called the games and amusements of mankind. And that's sad to think about, isn't it? I think there's a real tendency for Christians to want that for themselves. They want to be like those people, to assimilate into the world. They don't like to stand out, don't like to look different, and yet there is a benefit to standing out and to being with people who also are willing to stand out. I know that for me, when I was doing my education process, it was helpful that people knew that I claimed to be a Mennonite and that I wanted to be different. And I hope that even when we are in situations we are alone, we are still willing to remember who we are serving and why we do the things we do. I think it is every bit as hard being a Mennonite in 21st century America as Joseph in Egypt or Daniel in Babylon. But the blessing is faithful and will help us to maintain our testimony even under the strongest pressure to assimilate.